AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. 20-cent losses in soybean futures and wheat's willingness to follow beans to the downside made it hard for corn futures to show respect for what is a crazy strong string of export demand. Really makes me wonder if corn is waiting for beans to join the party, or if beans are trying to get corn an Uber for a ride home.
Live from the bucolic breadbasket of the nation via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with the pride of Chicago, Ted Seifert from Zahner Ag Hedge.
Yeah,
and right after the news, Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, how you doing, buddy? Did you see what I did there in the open? Did you
see what really I did? Good.
Party just getting started, or are beans saying, "Is this thing is done? Go home, corn. You're drunk.
Corn, you've had enough. I'm cutting
you've
you
had
off.
Enough. Yeah.
Uh huh.
Oh, I don't
let
know.
Him let him go. He'll be fine.
I don't know the answer to either of those questions, and I'm bringing this up now because I've lost the feeling. Okay.
What?
You know that every now and then I feel like I am really in tune with what the markets are doing, and I've proven to you more than once that I can kind of call what's going to happen the next day pretty close. Well, I was on a string. I was feeling really good about it. I'm not so much there anymore, not after a 1.7 million metric ton corn sale announced to China, and we can't really get corn to move to the upside. It tried. It failed because beans were too much of an anchor. We've got improved growing conditions in South America. I get that. But boy, oh boy, the demand pace that we are looking at on soybeans here in the U.S., I wonder if beans have forgotten that they have a job to do, and that is to maintain at least pipeline supplies of product for the end of the year. And I don't know if we're going to be able to do that the way this market is trading right now. Luckily,
wasn't it just yesterday you were saying that? Oh, man, I think I finally get it.
No,
was it yesterday?
No, it was
day before,
it was
maybe?
Monday. It was Monday.
Monday.
Yeah.
Okay. So it took a couple of days anyway to completely batter your spirits.
Well, I felt pretty good. I felt pretty good on Tuesday, lost it on Wednesday, and after today, I'm just like, what the heck? I don't know what's going on anymore. Thank you. Thank you, kitty. Appreciate that. All right. We got Seifert. That's going to be a barrel of fun coming up here in just a little bit. Let's make way for Oliver and get to the news.
Chip, export sales of wheat in the weekend of January 21 totaled to nearly 597,000 metric tons, but the tally featured much bigger than expected new crop sales of 216,000 tons. Old crop sales of more than 380,000 metric tons were also in line with trade expectations. On old crop sales, China topped the list, with Mexico, Japan, South Korea, and the Philippines also noted buyers. As expected, Nigeria topped the list of sales for 21-22 delivery, with Mexico also booking new crop wheat. Front month soft red wheat opened lower, tried to rally on spillover support from corn, then slipped back to close below yesterday's low. July HRW wheat was 9¾ cents lower at 6.26. July soft red wheat dropped 9 cents, 6.31½. September spring wheat down 14½ cents, 6.18¼. Chip.
Yeah, that 2021-22 demand that's in the market, that's value buying. That's the only way that you can describe it when they're buying this far out in advance.
Corn export sales in the weekend of January 21 easily topped trade expectations and totaled just over 1.85 million metric tons for old crop delivery. The tally was 61% bigger than the prior four-week average. Japan easily topped the list of buyers at almost 700,000 metric tons of corn, with Mexico, Colombia, and Israel also noted buyers. USDA this morning also announced this week's third big sale of old crop U.S. corn to China. Monday's sale totaled 1.36 million. Yesterday's tally, 680,000 tons. Today's announcement, the biggest of the three, 1.7 million metric tons. AgriBarge is happy. USDA also said reports of sales of nearly 214,000 metric tons of corn to unknown destinations were received during the reporting period. March corn futures were a half penny higher at 534½. May corn up a penny to close at 536¼. Dease corn closed at 438¾. down 3¾ cents. Do we have enough corn for all this, Chip?
Well, we'll
How
talk
much corn
about
do we
that
have
here.
Left?
We'll talk about that in just a little bit with Ted. But this is one of the most impressive strings of export demand that I've seen in, well, obviously, in a very long time.
Well, there was no daily export announcement for soybeans, but sales of just over 2.03 million metric tons in the weekly export sales report easily topped trade expectations. Surprisingly, old crop sales of 466,000 metric tons were way below the low end of trade expectations, but new crop sales of 1.564 million metric tons were triple the high end of trade guesses. Old crop bean sales were mostly to China, with Mexico, Indonesia, Egypt, and Taiwan also on the list of buyers. For 2021 and 22 delivery, unknown destinations topped the list, but China and the Netherlands were also noted buyers. March bean futures 21.5 cents lower, 13.53¼. May beans dropped 21¾ cents, 13.51½. November bean futures closed at 11.31¼, down 18 cents on the day, Chip.
Yeah, some really good numbers there on the export side of things, and it's got to be the South American weather that's offsetting this strong demand, but the market has a job to do. Let's quick get cotton in there.
You betcha. Export sales of cotton, outstanding, 376,000 running bales. Old crop at 323,000. Turkey, Vietnam topping the list of buyers. Pakistan, China, and South Korea also there. South Korea topped the list on the new crop cotton buyers, 54,000 bales March cotton, 91 points lower, 79.93. Yeah. Dees cotton off 58, 77.50. Chip.
Yeah, it's almost a bit of a bizarro world going on with the way that these markets are reacting to the demand out there. Thanks, Davis. We'll get to the livestock news before we kick things off with Ted. Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. How you doing, buddy?
I'm hanging in there, man. This first month of the year, it feels like a year has gone by. My gosh, everything is flying around. But it's exciting. It's exciting for sure.
Huh. Well, I'll bet it does feel that way for most, but for others, it feels like football season just got over.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. I'm sorry. Let's move on. Beans just not reacting to the demand that's in this market right now.
Yeah, really not. And we've seen the volatility, you know, across all markets, as you mentioned, through the whole month. I mean, just looking at this week alone, we're trading in about a dollar range for beans and close to 60 cents for corn. And that oftentimes invites more volatility. And I think we're going to continue to see that, as you had mentioned. Kind of the lack of follow through when we got more participation on the floor open is a little bit of a caution flag. The fact that we really finished lower on the day in corn, too, we're down, what, a half a cent, I think, on the last trade. But from the floor open to the last trade, I think we're close to 11 cents lower. So you got to take those overnight sessions with a grain of salt. They can be a little bit misleading. And the fact, as you had mentioned, that we couldn't get any follow through on the floor open with the great exports that we've seen is a little bit of a caution flag in the near term.
Why did this market flip like it has, Oliver? A few weeks ago, it was lower in the overnight, buy it on the start of the day session. Now it's higher in the overnight, sell it on the start of the day.
I wish I had a pretty good answer for you. The overnight sessions have always been a head scratcher, and that's, you know, you kind of look for that to be a trend. So we've been watching it for follow through, and if we can't get the follow through on the floor open, that probably sets a little bit of a tone for that day's session. That doesn't mean it's going to stay true tomorrow, but certainly something to note when that floor opens, where that participation comes in from.
Excellent. Good work, man. We'll talk to you later. All right, that's Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures, coming up next. Yeah, we're going to have a conversation with Ted Seifert, Zahner Ag Hedge. The Ted Spreads up next here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com.
I'm Chip. I've got Davis Michelson with me. We're getting ready for a conversation with Ted Seifert from Zahner Ag Hedge.
Yes.
Before we do that, Davis, let's get to the livestock news. What you got?
Sure thing. Well, beef export sales were very strong at 28,800 metric tons, but futures failed to move higher, with prices already at a premium to cash bids. February live cattle, 45 cents lower, 116 even. April cattle firmed 7.5 cents to 122.70. March feeder cattle slipped. What? You okay?
I do want to say, okay, this cash market, it's still at a discount to the futures market, mm-hmm. but we've got the strongest cash market that we've had since June. Okay? Henderson from Drovers was on the morning hour with us and gave us that little bit of perspective. So things are picking up, perking up in the cash market as well. So where did we leave off there? Feeders?
March feeder cattle down 27.5 cents today, 139.80. Snout side, pork export sales were outstanding. Nearly 53,000 metric tons, with Mexico topping the list of buyers, China, the Philippines, Japan, and South Korea also on that list. February lean hogs, 62.5 cents lower, 69.95. Yeah. April hogs firmed 7.5 cents to 76.37.5. Maybe Ted has some idea why these markets are just refusing to do what they're supposed to do. You suppose?
We'll go ahead and ask him.
Let's bring him in.
What's up, guys?
Ted Seifert.
How's it going?
Chip. It's good to talk with you, buddy.
Good to talk to you, too. I've heard you've lost that love and feeling, and I'm here to try to crochet it all back together for you. Oh, boy. Yes.
You know, I appreciate that, because sometimes I feel, Ted, that you and I are just two peas in a pod trying to figure out exactly
usurper.
What is going
usurper.
On.
You did it.
Trying to figure out exactly what is going on in these markets, and here we are one more time.
Sneaky sneak. Well done.
Love it.
Oh,
love
you it. Turned my own game around on me. I love it. Okay, well.
So what is going on? Why can't corn get going?
Yeah,
the export demand was outstanding this week.
I know. You know, I heard what you were saying in the intro, and I don't disagree with that. I mean, look at that. Almost 4 million metric tons of corn sold to China in the last 3 days. However, Chip, I'm going to ask you this. Okay. What's the next big bullish piece of news we're going to hear for corn?
The next big bullish piece of news could be, I guess, in the February 9 supply and demand report. Get that 100 million bushels of corn exports put back onto the export tally. Get our corn carryover down to 1.45, maybe 1.425.
Yeah, I'm 1.502. I'm putting 50 million back onto exports. Okay. But to your point, that's a little ways away from now. Are we going to continue to see sales on a daily basis to China to keep this bull market fed? And I'm not so sure we're going to. So as much as I want to get really enthusiastic and excited about these export sales that we're seeing, especially to China right now, I also worry about what's happening to domestic demand when we've got 530 plus corn. Also, I'm going to look at what's going on in export sales versus shipments. You know, last week we had a really very nice export sales week for corn. Then we have all these sales kind of thrown on top of it. But shipments, while very good at 1.4 million metric tons, need to be better than that, need to be a lot better than that in order to hit the USDA's target. And I think that's what's kind of causing corn to sort of drag its feet. And as you mentioned, you know, soybeans being down 21 cents today did not help the case at all.
That's right. And I've been mentioning that South American soybean crop conditions have been at least stabilized, maybe getting better. You've got to say the same about corn. There's still going to be a delay on the start of the corn planting, blah, 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 all of that. But conditions have improved. On the domestic side of things, you've got ADM out there saying, listen, China stepped in and bought 200 million gallons of ethanol. Mm-hmm. It feels to me like the market really hasn't responded to that yet. And I've seen a bit of a reaction to it, I think, anyway, out in the cash market with basis holding up at the ethanol producers. I don't know.
Look at RIN values too.
I've said it so many times, but I'm going to say it again. It feels like the corn market got the directive to go ahead and slow down export demand, slow down domestic demand, slow down use in general in that January 12 report. And I don't know if we've accomplished that.
Yeah, right. So, you know, when we looked at the January report and the USDA cut 250 million bushels out of demand, that was the USDA saying that we are price rationing demand up here. But the reality is that, no, we actually really haven't done that, especially from an export standpoint. What we don't know is what's happening on the feed side of things. That is a concern. You know, I mean, really, that is a concern. But ethanol for the moment looks pretty good. you worry about what happens, you know, spring and summertime, if we don't get back to our normal driving habits, depending on what this country looks and feels like at the time. But it's hard to get really tremendously bearish for corn demand. The problem, though, is, like I said, I mean, can we make the shipments between now and the end of the marketing year? One. And two, we're not going to get a more bullish supply side scenario unless we have a big problem with the second season corn crop down in Brazil. The supply side's taken care of. We can't sit here and talk about, oh, that yield needs to come down and so on and so forth. We've done that. That Band-Aid's been ripped off. So now we got to get bullish on the demand side of the equation. And now that we've seen all these big Chinese sales, unless they continue to happen, which I'm not so sure they do, at least not at the rate they have been happening, well, then we kind of have a little bit of a vacuum of that positive bullish news for corn. And that can allow us to kind of take a step back. Now talk about technicals. I mean, look, the last 2 days, we've spiked up into new highs, new contract highs, only to kind of come back down and barely close higher on the day today, barely put in a new contract high close. So, you know, on one side, you can say, hey, that's a bullish day. You know, new contract high close. Okay, but the bear side is going to say, yeah, but that was way off the highs. We couldn't hold on to the strength. That's 2 days in a row we couldn't do it. Yeah. This could be a problem. So I'm with you, man. I had a much better feeling on corn when we were at 420, and I thought, okay, we need to go to $5. But at 530, it becomes a much more difficult ball game. Same thing about soybeans.
Great point. The other thing that I think might be working into this corn market a little bit, Ted, big sales like we're seeing right now, it just raises the suspicion of upcoming cancellations, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's the big problem that you have with corn, because, you know, when you look at the outstanding commitments that haven't been shipped, and at the end of last week, we're almost at 30 million metric tons that are on the books but haven't been shipped yet, versus the 19 million that we have shipped so far. There's a huge amount of corn that needs to go out the door. One, are we going to be able to do it? And two, that leaves the door wide open for a whole bunch of cancellations, you know, if South America looks good and so on and so forth.
Right.
You don't have that same situation in soybeans. We'll get to those numbers whenever you feel like it. I've got them all written down, and that's something I definitely want to talk about.
Okay, excellent. You mentioned domestic demand of corn and ethanol in particular. So much of that is going to be driven by consumer confidence. And I hope this isn't too personal of a question. I mean, it's just you and me talking here, Ted.
Sure.
It's just, just you and me. Mm-hmm. As someone that had the virus and has recovered from the virus, what is your level of confidence getting out and amongst people?
Well, that's a great question. I also went to Hawaii over the holidays. And to do that, you have to take a test before you get on the plane and so on and so forth. And I felt a little bit uneasy about taking the test because I had been in contact with somebody who tested positive for coronavirus 4 days prior to that. So I was really, and I was in very close contact with him. I was really wondering how that was going to play out on that test I had to take to get on the plane. And I was negative. And I don't think there would be any way that I would have been negative if I hadn't had antibodies. So I feel like I feel pretty confident going out and being around, out and around. Now, I realize that antibodies don't last forever. I will also say that.
But you were questioning it until it was proven to you, weren't you?
Yeah, well, because we don't know the science. We don't know the science on this whole thing.
And you know it better than probably 90% of those that have had your experience.
Yeah.
And you were still questioning whether or not you were going to get it again after being in close contact.
Well, and the biggest reason I was questioning it is because when I had it the first time, I really didn't feel the effects of it very much at all. I didn't have a temperature. I did lose taste and smell, but I didn't feel poorly. So when I had to go take the test again, I didn't feel poorly. But, you know, could I have it? Possibly, maybe, yes.
Right.
You know, I don't know.
I get it.
But I feel comfortable being out in public now at this point, mainly because I know what it means for me. And I know I'm not going to die. You know, maybe it means I have to stay in my house for a week, but I can still work. I can still take care of my family. I'm ready to go. You know, as far as antivirus is concerned, let everybody else who needs it get it before me.
Right. I hear you. The vaccine there. And I think you know why I asked that question. It's all about consumer confidence going forward in what our fuel consumption is going to be and how fast that ethanol market can come back, especially if we start to see some export demand come back in here too. But RINs have taken off. RINs have absolutely taken off. I wonder what that's all about. We'll talk about that here coming up next. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing today. Ag Resource expects Chinese corn imports of between 25 and 27 million metric tons this season. Argentine farmers fret wheat export limits could be coming. USDA freezes $2.3 billion of supplemental CFAP. What does it mean? FSA described the action as routine during an administration transition. USDA economist says U.S. farmers expected to expand soy and corn acreage this year. China has warned Taiwan that independence means war. I don't know how much more clear the message from China to the rest of the world can be than that. And Blinken pledges U.S. support for Philippines in any South China Sea attack. Hey, check out all the Pro Farmers got to offer at tryprofarmer.com.
Do it.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by Delaro Complete. Keep your operation moving forward with Delaro Complete from Bayer.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. We're having a conversation today with Ted Seifert, Zahner Ag Hedge. Before we get back to Ted, let's go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Well, Chip, July hard red winter wheat was 9¾ cents lower, 626. July soft red dropped 9 cents to 631½. March corn futures were a half penny higher, 534½. May corn firmed a penny to close at 536¼. March soybean futures 21½ cents lower, 1353¼. May beans off 21¾, 1351½. February live cattle were 45 cents lower, 116 even. March feeders off 27½ to 139.80. And February lean hogs were 62½ cents lower at 69.95. And Chip, I know that you and Ted need to get to this conversation on the RINs and the ethanol stuff. But Ted,
yeah,
if I could just ask you, and if this is too personal, we can have Big Apple just edit this whole question right out of the whole show. So it's almost as though it never happened. But in talking about your experience with the coronavirus, right? Mm-hmm. You were a sufferer of this affliction. Mm-hmm. You had talked about you lost a chunk of hair.
Yeah.
And I think what America really wants to know is it growing back? Does it grow back?
So I'm currently bald as bald can be. I shave my head every other day. So I haven't given it enough. I haven't let it grow enough to really find out if it's coming back. But if I feel in that spot, it's still smoother than the rest of my head. So I don't think so. Yeah. And it's, again, about the size of a baseball and about the shape of Texas. And it's right above my ear. It's not the top of my head where, you know, guys usually lose their hair. Guys lose the hair on the top, but then the side, you know, stays very strong. No. Right. This is right on the side of my head. And then when I shaved my head, I realized there was about 5 or 6 other dime size spots on the back and the other side of my head too, that just hadn't come through yet. And I don't think it's back. I can't say for sure, cause I'm Mr. Clean bald head now.
Yeah, but you went full Picard. I mean, was it because of the bald spots? You were like, oh man, I got to do something to even this out, and just burnt it all down.
Yeah. So I tried to cut it real short to see if it looked better that way. Because I mean, it was, when my hair was longer, it was just super noticeable. And then I tried to cut it real short, and yeah, it made it look worse even. So then I just had to go
You guys know my son Thomas.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, when he was younger, much younger than what he is now, he went through a traumatic period in his life, for a young man, for anybody. Went through a traumatic period, and it caused some hair loss for him, and eventually that came back.
Right,
for him.
It's called alopecia.
Now, yes, yeah. Right. I don't know if you should take any hope or if you even care. Man. But what?
It's definitely a lot easier being bald. I'll say that. It's nice to. I mean, showers are just not even, well, it's like a 2-minute process at this point.
Well, you're saving all that money on shampoo. I mean, you got to be coming out ahead on the deal.
Oh. This is all staying in the podcast, by the way. I'm not editing this out.
This is too good.
Too good. That's fine.
Love it. Okay.
But you know what? No, I was not smart about when I had coronavirus because I kept going like I would normally do under normal circumstances. I continued to work. I wasn't coming into my office, and I couldn't because my kids were home. My wife was up in her room isolating for 11 days. I took care of the house. I took care of the kids, cooked, cleaned, worked like normal, and worked out like normal. And my doctor's like, you're dumb. You should have taken some time to rest and whatever. And that's, I pushed my body too hard, and that's what happened. So yeah, it should come back. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Wish you the best. Wish you the best, Joe.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I said, Joe,
why are Wrens rallying?
Hey, you know, the comment made by the ADM exec, you know, we kind of touched on that a little bit in the last segment. I think that Wrens might've been the best performer or the best beneficiary of that acknowledgement or that realization from the market. If we have a big competitor for exports, and keep in mind, 200 million bushels to China it would be a record for the marketing year for China.
200 million gallons.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sorry, 200 million gallons to China. That's a record. The previous record was 198, and that's a full marketing year. So that's a record to China, but that's not a huge chunk of our overall ethanol exports. But it is one more thing that domestic end users have to compete with, and therefore, hey, Wrens going to find some value there. I like seeing that.
Okay, so let's put a wrap on this corn conversation with an email that we got from Dan. And this very much summarizes where we even started with the show. If we are the cheapest corn in the world and end users are buying, why does the price go down?
Yeah, great question, right? Yeah. And we are the cheapest corn in the world, right? And when we say go down, I mean, we did close a half a cent higher today. So it wasn't a complete washout on the day. It's reluctant to go higher. And so when you're at 530 corn, you have to be very careful about not destroying demand for corn. It's a different story than soybeans. Corn, I think, has to be very careful not to destroy this demand. And as I was saying earlier, when you have 3 days of really fantastic export sales, what are the chances there's going to be a fourth and fifth day? Or are we going to see a little bit of break of this hot and heavy export sales to China? And if that's the case, can we come down a little bit to see if it finds some more interest if we're 10, 15 cents lower?
Right. Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. Okay. You said it's a different story than what we're looking at in soybeans. What is the story in soybeans?
You know, I sound like a broken record here, but, you know, since April, May, June timeframe, it seemed pretty clear to me that we didn't plant enough soybeans last year and we had a clear path to where we could run out of soybeans. And it seems to me that we've done that. We were talking about corn export sales versus shipments and how shipments are really lagging behind. Well, that is not the case in soybeans. We are shipping out soybeans as fast as we can sell them. There is obviously going to be a little bit of a lag between when they're sold and when they're shipped because that's just how it is. But we only need 15 million metric tons of shipped soybeans to hit the USDA's target. We only need, in order to hit from a sales perspective, to hit the USDA's target, we need less than 3 million metric tons. It's becoming very clear that we're going to hit that. I would also say that, you know, look at the new crop export sales that we saw for soybeans today. I think that's something that flew under the radar today. To me, that says very unlikely that we're going to see any cancellations for China and unknown destinations and the rest of the world to be buying soybeans for new crop as aggressively as they are right now. That means they want all the soybeans with no intention of making any cancellations. And there's not really all that many soybeans to be canceled. You know, like we were talking about in corn, that those shipments, give me 5-6 more weeks, we will have shipped the USDA's target. So it's a much different story for soybeans. Now, I'm going to go into a little bit of a conspiracy theory for soybeans here.
Awesome.
You look at what Chinese actions, not only on what they're doing on the global market as far as buying soybeans, but also the posturing that they're doing with the flyovers over Taiwan and everything that you were talking about in the break from the Pro Farmer headline news, by the way, awesome. They are really rattling sabers over there. They are kind of trying to test out this new administration to see what happens if they start fulfilling some of their expansionist ideas. They have designs on Taiwan. They have designs on the South China Sea. And I very much think that they are preparing for a period of time where the Western world is going to kind of shun them, especially from trade, rather than really, you know, go to war with them, for example. And so I think they have it in their head that they want to get at least 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 years worth of stocks in their storage before they make these moves to expand their empire, because they know that that's going to cause problems for their trade. So I think China is going to be buying hot and heavy pretty much every soybean they can find for the next few years here, potentially.
Wow. Now, war prep could be what you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, so look, that could be a conspiracy theory. Maybe it's just simply that their hog herd is so much better than what we thought it could possibly be at this time, which, by the way, I think is part of it. You know, so maybe it's just that. Maybe it's not something that's going to be wild for the next 3 years, but it certainly feels that way for me. And especially with the things that they're doing, again, they're blatantly, you know, the 18 aircraft fly over Taiwan. They're pushing at us. They're trying to see what sort of reaction Biden and the new administration are going to have. Right. And, you know, they want to expand. I really feel like they are planning something.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll continue to run that idea by some people and see what they think. There's this one off of Twitter, Ted, at Proverbs26Dad, it's Vance. He said he wants to know if the GameStop stuff is affecting commodity trade. I'm not looking for similarities. Is what's happening with GameStop affecting commodity trade?
Mm-hmm. Good question, Vance. You know, I'm going to say there is probably some of an effect there. And I'm looking at corn and soybeans and how they perform today and wondering if that had something to do with it. Because, you know, a lot of these market makers that are getting run out on being on their short positions they have in GameStop, like in Blockbuster Video, even the thing, right? Or Koss headphones. Man, I loved my Koss headphones back when I was 17 years old. But, you know, if these guys are really getting hurt in these other markets, are they going to have to trim some of their positions in other places? And we saw a lot of pressure on the stock market yesterday for that reason. I wonder if some of your funds that are long in the grain sectors are having to trim some of their positions because of that. Aside from that, no, I don't really think there's a profound effect. But if there is an effect, it's probably a negative one. And you didn't want this, but I'm going to give you some comparisons. Like, look at what we did to natural gas not that long, about a year ago, with the same scenario. There was short calls out there. We didn't know where they were, but the higher we went, it became apparent that somebody was stuck. Well, hey, listen, we are very seasoned traders when it comes to short squeezes in commodities. We do this on a very regular basis, right? So, yeah, come on, guys. You know, somebody post on Reddit and say, hey, soybeans, they're ripe for a short squeeze.
Come on, man. I love it. Ted, this is always fun when you and I get a chance to do this. Thanks, buddy.
Hey, it's always a pleasure. Buy cattle, by the way, if we didn't get a chance to talk about livestock. But go
ahead
and do
that. You like the cattle market. All right.
I do. I think cash has room to go higher. Box beef prices are great. Exports are pretty good today, so I like it.
Beautiful. Good stuff, man. Thanks, buddy. Take care. We'll talk to you later. Ted Seifert, Zahner Ag Hedge. When we come back, Davis and I will put a wrap on today's second hour of AgriTalk.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
You know, we probably should have had this bump when Ted was coming on, because I think Dwight and Ted are both Cadillac fans.
I think it's safe to say they are simpatico on that note.
I think so. Yes. I think that's right. With the crocheted seat covers, they're like two peas in a pod.
Double. Hey, I gotta do something really quick. You know?
Oh, what?
Well, just when I think that I'm just talking into a microphone that isn't even on, maybe, you know? Sometimes I struggle with that. Is anybody really listening? Is anyone out there?
Yes.
We got an email. We got an email from a listener, clear in Morocco, Indiana. So I just need to send a shout out. It's Bree. Bree at Newton Soil and Water Conservation District office in Morocco, Indiana. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your kind words. We're really glad to have you listening. You know, but it almost sounded like she didn't have much choice. She said, your show comes in on one of the two radio stations that we get.
I love that.
But we'll take it. We'll take it.
there's a choice, and it's on our stations.
And she chooses us, Chip.
That's right.
I do want to mention, and she didn't ask for this, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway, because doggone it, this is the kind of power a newsman holds.
Do it.
Yeah. Bree, there's a soil health webinar coming up next week. Now, she's over in the, I believe it's the Lower Kankakee Watershed region. Yep. February 5, there's a soil health webinar. Go to www.kankakeewatershed.org for the details. And if you're from that area and need to be there, you already know how to spell Kankakee.
That's right.
Kankakeewatershed.org. And doggone it, thanks for the note. And
yes,
thanks for listening, Bree. Have a great
Absolutely.
Day. Have a great
Thank
day.
You, Bree.
Yes.
Appreciate it. That's right. Good stuff. Mm-hmm. Thank you for doing that. Okay.
Hey, what do you think? Is China laying in for war?
That's an interesting
gets crazy.
Theory.
Right?
You see, he was throwing conspiracy in on the front of it. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would do that. I would just call it theory that Ted's got.
Well, let me add this to that. Mm-hmm. You know, and we've talked about it before. I don't mean to keep beating the dead horse, but I don't even remember how long ago it was that the inputs monitor started covering there's something going on in the South China Sea.
Yeah,
I think that they're going to build islands out there and try to lay claim to it. No, don't be a nut. Take off the tinfoil hat. Come on, get serious now.
Dude, you've been on that for like 4 or 5 years.
And it felt at the time, well, maybe this is a conspiracy theory. I can't publish this, can I?
Right.
Well,
there it is.
Turns out.
That's what they're doing.
Yeah. And so now, I don't know what to call a conspiracy theory anymore.
It is a people. It's a population that has proven time and time again that they are capable of doing things that you don't think is even possible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've got a long history and they've had many, many thousands of years in which to prove that they are capable of things we don't think they are, would even consider.
Right.
And there's no reason to think that is going to change now.
Right.
Zero reason. The fact that they imported the ethanol, there's other reasons for ethanol or are importing the ethanol.
Yeah.
There are other reasons for importing ethanol. You know, depending on what grade they are getting, there can be some jet fuel involved there.
Mm-hmm.
There can be some
cleaner burning jet fuel, I might say.
Cleaner burning, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that it's for a 10% blend in every vehicle that's going up and down the roads over there to clean up the air and to use up more ethanol out from the world. 200 million gallon, like Ted said, it's the biggest one-time purchase. It would be a record for a year. And it's about, you know, you got to consider a billion gallons a big year. Anymore. You got to consider a billion gallons a big year. So it'd be roughly 20% of a big year to one customer.
Right.
I think that's important. So that's got something to do with the RINs, like Ted said. The other thing is just the Biden plans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know that we continue to talk about the EVs, and GM was out this morning saying that in 2035, all of their new vehicles are going to be electric. They're going to run into issues as they are pushing toward that, namely, first and foremost, the powering stations. And not just getting enough power stations or recharging stations out there, but getting power to the recharging stations.
Right.
How are they going to do that?
Ethanol has proven how difficult that is. How many times have you said, if we could just get these blender pumps put in or incentivize those blender pumps, we got to get the infrastructure going. Then we're really going to see something.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm telling you.
We're going to start from zero with the
With the charging stations. Yeah. And not only that, but creating enough carbon-free electricity to get electricity to all of those those charging stations. I don't know. Look at how they've got the brownouts, the rolling brownouts in California. Mm-hmm. The grid in the Northeast is just like strung together with baling wire and duct tape, it seems like.
Yes.
And we're going to power a fleet with what? There's a lot of work to be done between now and EVs to the point that it really takes a bite out of fuel demand. I know it sounds like I'm ignoring progress, and I'm not. I'm trying to stay up with what is going on out there as much as I can. But goodness gracious, there's a long ways to go. Real quick, National Weather Service 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day forecast has got below normal temperatures moving into the middle of the country with above normal precipitation. We're starting to pile the snow up, and that makes it sound like it's going to continue to happen. Hey, for Big Apple, Joe Stackler, and for Davis, thanks for listening. We got a free-for-all tomorrow morning. Wiesmeyer, Haney, and Wrecker.